Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going deep on something you guys requested, the biochemistry of love. We've got a whole stack of cocktail party chemistry stuff, notes, factoids, all that. Let's see what we can pull out for you.
Love, universal, but like endlessly fascinating. It is kind of wild though how we can break this like intangible feeling into, you know, actual chemicals.
Right. Like the episode description basically gave us five key ingredients. We got oxytocin, dopamine, pheromones, serotonin, and then that whole love and addiction thing. Where do we even begin?
Well, since we're talking chemistry here, let's start with the bonding hormone itself, oxytocin. Most people think cuddles, you know, feeling close, that kind of stuff. But it goes way deeper than that.
Yeah. Like, it's essential for mother-infant bonding, romantic relationships, heck, even with pets. But then there's this whole factoid about a baby smell molecule, hexadecanal. What's the link there?
Oh, it's fascinating. So that, you know, classic new baby smell everyone loves. Hexadecanal is actually one of the molecules responsible for it. And studies have shown it reduces aggression in adults and actually triggers nurturing behavior.
Like nature's way of making sure we don't completely lose it during those late night feedings?
Exactly. Both oxytocin and hexadecanal, in their own way, are promoting that crucial social connection. It's amazing how these chemical signals work on, like, so many levels.
Really makes you appreciate how complex our biology is, even for basic human interaction.
But oxytocin isn't all sunshine and roses, though, right? There's that link to addiction, which seems kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah, that's where things get really interesting. So there's this factoid about anandamide, our brain's own cannabis, essentially. Mm-hmm. Anandamide actually activates the same receptors as THC, and like THC, it's super involved in the brain's reward system.
So, like, we get pleasure from certain substances, but also from social bonding. Exactly. And research suggests oxytocin also acts on their same pathways. So you combine that with its role in bonding, and the lines between love and addiction start to get a little blurry.
That's kind of freaky, right? To think that the same brain circuits in, say, a gambling addiction could also be at play in how we experience love.
It definitely raises some, you know, big questions about love and attachment. Are those intense feelings of longing, the euphoria when falling in love, is it just our reward system going haywire?
And if so, I mean, does that make love less meaningful? Or does it just give us, like, a deeper understanding of its power?
That's for each person to decide, I guess.
Yeah.
But understanding oxytocin and, you know, this reward system, it definitely adds a new dimension to how we view those intense early stages of a relationship.
It's crazy how much depth there is to something we often just take for granted. Okay, let's shift gears to another major player in the love game, dopamine.
Ah, yes. Dopamine. Pleasure, desire, motivation. You know that rush when you see someone you're attracted to? That anticipation of a date? That's dopamine flooding your system, creating that sense of excitement and reward.
So dopamine is basically why falling in love feels so good, at least at first. But there's some weird side effects too, right? I remember something about phantasmia, like smelling things that aren't there.
That's right. Certain medications can cause phantasmia. Basically, it's like olfactory hallucinations. And it makes you wonder, could that intense dopamine activity during love also cause, you know, subtle sensory distortions?
Wait, so love could actually change how we experience the world. That's kind of trippy.
Right. Maybe not full-on hallucinations, but maybe our senses are heightened or our perceptions are skewed. You know, we talk about seeing the world through rose-colored glasses when in love. Maybe there's a biological reason for that.
Speaking of seeing things differently, there was that factoid about Viagra causing synopsia, which is basically seeing everything in blue, right?
Exactly. Now, Viagra's working on a very different system than dopamine, but it highlights how medication can directly mess with our perception. Maybe love, with all its neurochemicals, is also kind of tweaking our senses in ways we don't even realize.
Man, I'm starting to think falling in love is less about Cupid's arrow and more like a full-blown biochemical takeover. It's fascinating. And kind of scary.
It definitely has a way of hijacking our rational minds. But hold on. We've got three more key players to explore. Pheromones, serotonin, and the whole love and addiction connection.
Seems like we're just getting started with this love potion. What's next?
So we've covered oxytocin, dopamine, bonding, pleasure, all that. But what about those, like, mysterious signals of attraction pheromones? Do they even, like, work in humans? Or is that just, I don't know, romantic myth?
Yeah, I mean, these invisible chemicals making us fall for each other, it sounds kind of magical, right?
Yeah.
But I remember from the cocktail party chemistry episode, it's not quite that straightforward.
Right. Like, the common idea is that we humans have this vomeronasal organ, like some animals, specifically to detect pheromones. But we don't. Doesn't mean we're totally immune to chemical signaling, though.
So there's still a chance we're sending and receiving these like subtle cues, even if it's not something we're like consciously smelling. I'm kind of curious about that factoid mentioning Darcin, the protein in mice.
Right. Oh, yeah. Darcin is a perfect example of how complex these pheromone systems can be. So in mice, this protein basically acts as a pheromone, makes males more attractive to females. But here's the cool part. It also triggers learning and memory formation in those females.
So it's not just like basic attraction. There's a deeper, almost, I don't know, cognitive thing going on. Could that be happening in humans, even without a specific organ for it?
It's possible. Like, we might not have that dedicated pheromone organ, but there's more and more research looking at how subtle chemical signals might be affecting human attraction and, you know, behavior in general. Maybe we're not consciously smelling them, but our brains are picking up on it.
That is so wild. Like, what other hidden influences are shaping our feelings? We've got oxytocin for bonding, dopamine for desire, maybe pheromones for that initial spark. What about the love makes you crazy phase? Isn't that where serotonin comes in?
Exactly. Serotonin, we usually think of it for mood, right? But it's also involved in obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD.
Wait, OCD? That seems like a pretty intense connection to make with love.
I know, right? But think about those early stages of a relationship, the constant thoughts about your partner, checking your phone a million times, overanalyzing everything, ringing any bells.
Oh, totally. Like,
yeah.
New love brain fog is real.
Mm.
Are you saying those feelings are actually like linked to serotonin somehow?
Exactly. Research suggests that falling in love can actually cause serotonin levels to drop, which might explain those obsessive, kind of addictive behaviors we see in those early stages.
So love is messing with our brain chemistry to make us act a little nuts? Is that what you're saying?
In a way, yeah. Just another example of how love impacts our biology, not always in a totally positive way either.
Okay, this is both fascinating and slightly terrifying. It's like love is this delicate dance with all these chemicals pulling us in different directions.
It really is. And to throw another wrench in the gears, we got to consider the gut microbiome too. There was a factoid about how gut bacteria could be messing with our mood via these orphan receptors in the gut.
Orphan receptors. Those are the ones like scientists don't fully understand yet,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're in the gut, in the brain. We know they exist, but we're still figuring out what they actually do. But some researchers think these orphan receptors could be involved in how we experience emotions, including love.
Hold up. So our gut bacteria are sending signals to our brains, and that could influence how we feel about someone. That's insane.
Sounds crazy, right? But there's more and more evidence that the gut microbiome is way more important for, like, everything than we used to think. Changes in our gut bacteria, stress, diet, whatever, could be affecting our mood and behavior in ways we're just starting to understand.
My mind is officially blown. It's like our love lives are being controlled by this symphony of chemicals from our brains to our gut.
And we're still learning how to read the music. But that's what makes it so cool, right? There's so much we don't know, so many mysteries to unravel.
Speaking of mysteries, I remember the cocktail party chemistry episode mentioned psychedelics and how they might affect love and the brain. Anything to that?
There might be. But before we go there, let's loop back to the endocannabinoid system and, you know, those cannabis-like molecules our brains make.
Right, anandamide.
Yeah.
Bliss molecule, I think some people call it. How does that tie in with psychedelics?
Well, some researchers think that certain psychedelics like LSD could be interacting with the endocannabinoid system in ways we don't fully get yet. And this system, it's a big deal for regulating mood, perception, even social behavior.
So you're telling me tripping on acid might be messing with my brain's own cannabis system. Is that what you're saying?
Could be. There's more and more research showing that psychedelics actually interact with a bunch of different neurotransmitter systems in the brain, not just serotonin, which is what we usually hear about.
Wow. Okay. This gives me a whole new perspective on those, mind-altering experiences. It's not just about hallucinations and stuff. There could be deeper changes happening at, like, the molecular level.
Exactly. And the endocannabinoid system could be one of those key players affecting how we process emotions, connect with others, even how we experience love.
Okay, my brain needs a minute to process all of this.
Okay.
We've gone from baby smells to gut bacteria to, like, psychedelic trips, all in the name of love.
It is a lot to take in. Let's take a quick breather, then we'll tackle the last piece of this puzzle, the connection between love, stress, and addiction.
Okay, phew. I think I've finally caught up after all that talk about chemicals and receptors.
Yeah, it's a lot, right? Unpacking love into, like, its biological bits can be pretty mind-blowing.
For sure. So, where do we go from here? What's the final piece to understanding this whole like biochemistry of love?
Well, we've covered the hormones, the neurotransmitters, the things that drive bonding, pleasure, even that kind of obsessive stuff. But there's another big factor, stress.
Stress. Wait, I thought stress was the opposite of love. Aren't those first few months supposed to be all like butterflies and happiness?
You'd think so, right? But new relationships, like any big change, they can bring a certain amount of stress. You're figuring out this new dynamic, trying to impress them. Maybe you even feel, I don't know, a bit vulnerable.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make those early stages perfect.
Yeah.
But how does stress fit into this whole like chemical picture of love? And what about the connection to addiction, like they mentioned in the cocktail party chemistry episode?
So, research has shown that stress can actually increase the chance of relapse for people struggling with addiction. When we're stressed, our brains want that dopamine hit even more, so we're more likely to fall back into old habits.
Okay, so if love can also trigger those dopamine surges, are you saying falling in love could actually make someone like more vulnerable to addiction?
It's tricky. I mean, we got to be careful about saying one thing directly causes another. But the link between stress, love, and addiction, it's definitely something to think about. They all seem to use those same reward systems in the brain.
That's a bit unsettling. Like maybe those intense ups and downs of love, especially early on, maybe they hit harder for people who are already prone to addiction.
It's possible. But hey, let's not forget about the good side of stress, too. A little bit of stress can actually be, good for us. Both personally and for our relationships.
Hold on. Good stress. Was that a real thing?
Totally. Think about the excitement of a first date or the anticipation leading up to a wedding. Those are stressful events, but they're also fun and exciting.
Right. So good stress is the kind that makes you feel like energized, not the kind that sends you into a panic spiral.
Exactly. And that kind of stress can actually make relationships stronger. It pushes us out of our comfort zones, helps us grow. And those shared memories, they bring us closer together.
So it's about finding that balance, right? Enough stress to keep things interesting, but not so much that it like takes over or leads to bad habits.
Yeah, balance is key. And that brings us to our final takeaway, knowing your own individual biochemistry.
Wait, what do you mean? How do we even figure out our own like chemical makeup?
Well, we've spent all this time talking about how these chemicals affect us, right? But the thing is, everyone's brain chemistry is a little different. Some people are super sensitive to dopamine, others are more driven by serotonin. There's no like single formula for love.
So what, there's no secret to finding the one. It all comes down to this mix of biology, our personality, and just like luck.
Pretty much, love is messy, it's beautiful, and yeah, it's kind of unpredictable. But the more we understand about ourselves, our needs, our tendencies, how we react to things, the better we can handle all the ups and downs of relationships.
This has been an amazing deep dive. I feel like I've learned so much about the science behind love. Definitely not as simple as those rom-coms make it seem.
No, not simple at all. But that's what makes it so interesting. And remember, this is just scratching the surface of like a ton of research out there. There's always more to learn.
Well, I know where to come next time I have a love life crisis. No more blaming it all on Cupid. I'm going to take control of my love chemicals.
That's the spirit. Knowledge is power, right? Even when it comes to love.
To all you deep divers out there, keep those brains curious and those hearts open. Until next time, happy exploring.